This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. With our biggest sale ever, furnaces from $39 a month, furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month, plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guarantees to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call 864-SEASONS.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, back on the Jeff Cockett Show. Let's do this. Chris Herndon. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Castles Made of Sand by Jimi Hendrix in honor of the, or in commemoration of the Marcus Smart era, which fell into the sea yesterday.
Yeah. What'd you think of that trade when the Grizzlies made it?
I thought, man, I misread who the expiring contract from Washington would be. Because if you listen, if people, regular Jeff Calkins Show listeners, if you listen yesterday, we basically outlined the exact trade deadline moves the Grizzlies ended up making. I said yesterday on the show, I thought there was a good chance they just didn't do anything. And then you said, well, what if they do something? And I said, well, the one move that's out there, if they want to dump Marcus Smart and, you know, attach a pick and dump him, you could send him to Washington for Malcolm Brogdon. And you said, oh, what about Jake LaRavia? And I said, oh, you know, they could maybe they move him for a second round pick. And so that is exactly what they did. The only thing we got wrong was, like, what expiring contracts were coming back from the Wizards. So I was not at all surprised, like, even the slightest bit surprised. I was sort of disappointed. It's not what I would have wanted to see. And I was annoyed that it happened right at the trade deadline buzzer. Said I had already written an entire column about them not doing anything that I had then had to just throw away and start over with.
All right, so the Malcolm Brogdon thing, at least a live body who they actually might have deployed later this year, and certainly the Lonzo Ball version of that, would have been maybe more or less disappointing to some Grizzlies fans than this is more clear dump. But let's just what went into this decision? What do you imagine went into this decision?
Oh, I don't think I think there's a difference between the Ball and the Brogdon thing, and that I think the Ball, more I looked at it, I actually would have really liked the Lonzo Ball thing, which I think they did try to do. I don't think the Grizzlies cared about Malcolm Brogdon, and so I don't think the Washington wanted to trade him, so I don't think there was much disagreement on that one. So what was the question again?
Well, what was the Grizzlies thinking here? What do you think went into this?
There's two components to this. There's the this season component and the this summer component. And in this case, they sort of lined up. They wanted to clear, I mean, the goal here was, you know, the clear Marcus Smart's $21.6 million contract in the summer to allow them to potentially do some other things with that money instead of paying it to Marcus Smart. But the reason they wanted to do that is because they, and they're not going to say this, but to me it is unmistakable from the move, and it is the core of it, is they did not believe that Marcus Smart would help them. And that even with his experience, the reason they traded for him, this experience of playoff basketball, they believed that the on-court stuff was such that it was not going to help them, and that they would be better off playing Vince Williams and Jalen Wells and Scottie Pippen than Marcus Smart, even in playoff basketball, in that if they, and this is me extrapolating, but I think this is essentially true. And so you, if you decide you want to play those guys over Marcus Smart, even in the playoffs, as young as they are, can you do that without trading Marcus Smart? Are you going to keep Marcus Smart and not trade him? Or if you keep Marcus Smart, are you going to look up and he's in the rotation and Vince Williams is not, or Scottie Pippen is not, or whatever, and you think that hurts your basketball team? So I think this was a vote of no confidence in Marcus Smart helping the team. If they believed Marcus Smart would help them, they would not have made this trade, even with the financial considerations.
Right. So when people ask, and that really is the main question that people were asking yesterday, was why now? Why not at least keep him around for the playoffs? There is no way to answer that without concluding that they at least believe he would have been no help during the playoffs. And so therefore, there's no reason to wait for to do the money stuff because you aren't getting anything out of it because he wasn't going to be an asset. Right.
Not only would have been no help, but I think would have been a hindrance because they would have, if they believe he's the worst player, but you're going to play him anyway because he's Marcus Smart. I do think that to me, it's just inescapable that is part of this calculation. Now, you can say, like, you want to clear the money because, you know, it helps you re-sign Santi, or maybe, and I'm skeptical on this one, maybe it helps you to do this renegotiate and extend thing with Jaren. Like, all that might be true, but if you thought Marcus Smart was going to be like Boston Marcus Smart, you're not making the trade.
No, and I think to your point, I think he did not. Now I think they think the vibes were bad. I mean, I'm just guessing. The vibes were bad around Marcus Smart, and so they're better off without Marcus Smart.
I don't feel comfortable saying that exactly, but I do have a line in the column where I said there's a widespread sense that he left his heart in Boston. You know,
right?
And so I do think that there's that.
Well, I hinted last week that I had heard that he may not come back, and it wasn't health reasons, right? Like, in the end, like, I think,
right.
And there's also very clearly, like, they've been, obviously, we've been hearing the name Marcus Smart all along just because of his salary, but increasingly over the last few days,
not out of the blue. Like, I rolled out my Marcus Smart escape hatch trade more than a week ago, and that's what this was.
Yeah. Okay. So, in terms of the money part, though, Chris, what is the, well, there's two parts of this. One, is there any, apart from what they might do with the money, is there any reason to think that they couldn't have done some version of this for roughly the same price this summer? In other words, is there any bird in the hand is worth two in the bush? Like, we know we want him off the payroll this summer. Let's get him off now. Is there any reason to do it now as opposed to later, if it's only in uncertainty? Or do you imagine they certainly would have been able to do this, so that didn't play into it at all?
There's a reason to do it now. I mean, so there's two things. Even if you decide Marcus Smart's not helping you as a player and it's sort of a dead contract, the questions are, do you want to make the contract disappear, or do you want to use the contract as an expiring contract trade chip? Obviously, if you wanted to use it as a trade chip and not make the money disappear, you would have kept it for next summer. If you want to make the money disappear, it's easier to do that now than in the summer. Because to make the money disappear now, you just have to trade him for expiring contracts, which they did with Washington. To make the money disappear in the summer after the league financial calendar flips, you have to send him to a team with enough cap space to absorb the contract, and there aren't going to be many of those. So your options to make the money disappear are greater now than they were going to be in the summer.
Okay, so that's another reason to do it now. I'm trying to answer these people's questions. Why now? One is not Marcus Smart either had, in their perception, little, no, or negative value on the team. Two, there actually is a reason it's easier to get rid of the money now than in the summer. And then the third part of this that you said you're more skeptical about is, what exactly are they going to, what does this open up the opportunity to do this summer that they wouldn't otherwise been able to do?
I mean, this stuff gets super complicated. And again, I still have this thing that's going to come out at some point. I updated it this morning with the Smart thing. So there's different components to that. If you want to re-sign something, one thing here is I do think this is even more of a tip-off that they plan to keep Santi Aldama. And so if you want to re-sign Santi Aldama and you know, maybe either keep Luke Kennard or replace Luke Kennard with somebody else and stay under the luxury tax. I think this helps all of that. On the Jaren thing, so a lot of people are talking about this, I think, because this is part of the messaging about the trade. If you get under the cap, you can renegotiate Jaren's contract, and it makes it easy to extend him this summer. There's two things with that. One is that if he makes all NBA, it doesn't matter because he's eligible for this other extension that you don't have to renegotiate the contract to do. The other thing is, I believe, and I've crunched the numbers on this, to do a renegotiation and extension that he would actually entertain, you're not there yet. I think removing Marcus Smart's money to me doesn't get you there. Now, it starts to clear the path, and maybe they thought there was value in, like, let's begin to clear the path, and that way, if we need to fully clear it, we have a head start on that, and it makes it easier this summer. I kind of buy that, but they're not there yet. I think that would mean, like, you know, you got to make John Conchar's contract disappear, something else would need to happen. This is not enough.
All right. So that closes the books on the Marcus Smart deal. What did you think of that deal when it happened? The original Marcus Smart deal, like, in the end, I think it's okay to judge things in retrospect, how they worked out.
Right.
Like I judged the Pau Gasol trade because Marc Gasol worked out brilliantly. Like I've reevaluated that trade in wake of what actually happened. But there is also something to be said for thinking about the thoughts in the moment, and in the moment, it kind of made sense, but there was this whole Boston was ready to move on. What did you think about the trade when they first made it? I said that it is now, I think, officially the worst Memphis Grizzlies trade ever. Not the worst transaction ever, because they signed Chandler Parsons, then they drafted Hasheem Thabeet, I'd throw Allen Iverson there if you want, but the worst trade ever. What did you think at the time, and what do you and do you give them credit for making the swing, or what did you make of all that?
I think I approved of it with but considerations of potential problems with it. And one thing I do remember, there were two components to that in terms of why they made that trade when they made it. There was a basketball component and there was a cultural locker room component. You got to remember that was a very specific moment in the franchise where the Ja Morant off-court stuff was happening, the Dylan Brooks stuff had gone bad. There was just a sour situation, and I think there was a real focus on stabilizing the culture in the locker room with veterans who had the kind of personalities they thought would be effective. No way to say Danny Green had not been, right? And if you remember, that was the summer that there was a, I know this may sound funny to some people, but it's true. There was, Rogers had reported they had talked to Golden State about maybe trading for Draymond Green. They did trade for Marcus Smart, and they signed Derrick Rose. I think they were targeting veterans who they thought would actually get the attention and respect of John Morant and maybe others. So that would sort of change the culture a little bit. And that was a real component of it. Now, it was almost entirely the reason they signed Derrick Rose. It was not entirely the reason they traded for Marcus Smart, but that was a piece of the puzzle. And, like, who's to say that stuff didn't actually work?
Have an impact.
That part
of
it. Right. Yeah. Now, on the basketball side, you know, they were trying to replace Dylan Brooks, and they were sending out Tyus Jones. And I've talked about this with other trades this week, and I've talked about Jalen Wells and Vince Williams. They wanted their other wing to be able to scale down and guard, have the versatility to guard, like, smaller guards, like Dylan Brooks did. Marcus Smart was someone who had the ability to come in and guard across positions. I think that was sound. Now, the idea that he was also going to replace the ball handling of Tyus Jones, that was less sound and more wistful, and that did not work out at all. Zero. Even when he played, that did not work out. The other component of it was, are you getting the Marcus Smart that has existed in the past, or are you getting a different Marcus Smart going forward? That was, like, a legit concern. That was a legit gamble, and that gamble ended up not paying off at all. They bet wrong on that. This idea that, like, Boston's traded him at the right time because they know it's about to go all over a cliff, they took a bet on that, and they bet wrong.
It is sort of interesting. This it's a theme of the Grizzlies, and maybe it's not unusual. Maybe it's all kinds of franchises trying to get the missing piece, whether it's Jeff Green or Chandler Parsons or Marcus Smart or, you know, Courtney Leave, and, like, they've been tried to get, and it's a tough thing to do. It's a version of the DeAndre Hunter trade that the Cavs made yesterday. And when you said you were disappointed, I mean, it's not what you would have wished for them to do. I take it what you would have wished for them to do is some version of the DeAndre Hunter trade. But Wiggins wasn't there for them.
Wiggins is who I specifically cited. And I don't know whether they attempted to do that or not. I've seen no indication that they attempted to do that. Even if they had, they probably would not have gone through because I think Miami wanted Wiggins. As far as I know, they didn't even attempt that. That's what I would have gone after. I like the ball thing, which they did try to do. I think that would have, A, accomplished all the same things that we're talking about now, but also brought in a player who might have helped. I thought doing nothing was fine, actually. I was going to totally defend doing nothing. But to me, the best version, realistic best version, because like the Jimmy Butler thing wasn't realistic or whatever, to me, trying to flip Marcus Smart and give up a pick or two to get someone bigger and better with experience like an Andrew Wiggins or, you know, something like or DeAndre Hunter or that kind of thing is what, to me, I would have liked to have seen happen.
Yeah, it's partly more disappointing because it really does confirm that they think Marcus Smart has no value, right? Like we could at least indulge this possibility that maybe playoff Marcus Smart would have some value, and it does do that. I'll say this though: one of the things you pointed out in the column, and I've retweeted it, people can read it over the Daily Memphian, is that actually, if you look at the draft assets they sent out and got back yesterday, it wasn't a huge payment to have Marcus.
I don't think the draft component of this is much of a big deal at all. So if you separate it out, you say they got the 1 second round pick for Laravia, like that's fine. That's sort of what you expect at that point. And so the Marcus Smart thing is you're trading your first and you're getting back a second. This convoluted protection thing a second, but let's just say it's probably going to be a pick in the mid to late 40s. I think that's where it's going to be. So your pick is going to be like 26, 27. And so I know like first round picks are shiny. But, like, whatever. Like, there's a difference between picking 27 and 46, but, like, there's not, like, an enormous difference. It's a real difference, but it's not, like, categorically some, like, separate kind of thing. So they basically traded back 20 spots to get off of $20 million of salary. And I think that's actually pretty good as a value proposition goes. That's actually pretty good. The problem was, like, feeling like you needed to get off that money for that player you had given up stuff to get.
Yeah. That's a point I wanted to make. It wasn't actually we say and listen for our perspective. I've got radio to talk about. We only mock a first round, Chris. It is much better to talk about a first round pick than a second round pick when the draft comes. But functionally, I think you're right. It doesn't make a huge. What were you going to say?
I said the bad Marcus Smart trade was the first one.
Yeah. Right.
The bad.
Anything else strike you particularly from around the league yesterday? Oh, we also had this the thing from Bob Myers that they checked in on Kevin Durant. What do you think of that?
So here's jumping off reporting into educated guesswork. There's a story, the story of the Athletic. There's this whole story about how Minnesota tried to trade for Kevin Durant and the valiant effort that they undertook to try to trade for Kevin Durant. This is the second time the Grizzlies have tried to trade for Kevin Durant. Here's what I think happened on all of that. I think that the Phoenix Suns really wanted Jimmy Butler for whatever reason. They really wanted Jimmy Butler. And they were trying to trade Bradley Beal to add Jimmy Butler to Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. And then when it finally was clear that that was not possible, they were willing to trade Kevin Durant to get Jimmy Butler. And I think for two reasons. One, they would have gotten more stuff with Jimmy Butler. And two, they would have signed him to a long-term extension, whereas Durant has a year and a half left on his contract. So I think the Phoenix Suns were going to trade Kevin Durant to get Jimmy Butler. They were going to trade him to Golden State. I think that got close enough to happening that Kevin Durant was alerted and said, you know what, I do not want to go to Golden State. At that point, the whole league knows about it. So people around the league are saying, huh, they're actually entertaining trading Kevin Durant. Why not us? And so people start picking up the phone. And we know from reporting that Minnesota and Memphis picked up the phone. But I bet they're not alone. I mean, other people did, too. So people are picking up the phone and saying, we'll give you this for Kevin Durant. But they weren't trying to trade Kevin Durant. They were just trying to trade him for Jimmy Butler. And so, and Kevin Durant didn't want to be traded. For anything I've seen, this was not like Kevin Durant saying, I will not go to Memphis. It's Kevin Durant saying, don't trade me.
Right.
And so he wanted to go to Miami, you know? And so that's what all that's about. So I think the Grizzlies made an offer for Kevin Durant, like Bob Myers said? Yeah. But, like, I don't think that that was ever going to happen, so I don't really care that much about it.
Do you think that in this quest to pick up this, you know, additional piece that's going to put you over the top or whatever, that the Grizzlies being in Memphis, whatever, has that's not what stopped them from getting DeAndre Hunter. What stopped them getting DeAndre Hunter is Cleveland had more things that Atlanta wanted. You could have made that deal if you had the stuff they wanted. I guess at the margins.
Or you were willing to pay a certain amount.
Yes.
Right.
But it's harder in Memphis?
I think it makes it harder to import a name brand veteran star who has enough leverage to exert influence on where he goes. Yes, I think that's true of Memphis, and that's true of like 22 other teams.
Right.
So yeah, do I think it hurts you if you're trying to like get an established star player? I do. But like, guess what? They grew them. This is one of the points I made. Like, you know, the Grizzlies built a contender. They grew a contender while everyone was waiting for them to trade for one. And while they failed to trade for one, they grew one anyway. Like, they got their stars. So John Morant, Jared Jackson, and Desmond Bane. And this idea that they were going to trade for another star to add to that, that's just, from a salary standpoint and everything else, I just don't think that's real life. They grew up. And now you're adding around it. When Golden State traded for Jimmy Butler, they traded away the second highest paid player on the team to get Jimmy Butler. People were acting like the Grizzlies were going to acquire Jimmy Butler without trading any of the three highest paid players on the team. It's just not real life.
And they also drafted a bunch of players who would think are better than Marcus Smart.
You know, that's right.
Like Vince Williams, they picked up on the second round. They're wizards at drafting, and they think he's better than Marcus Smart. Okay, Chris, I got to let you go in a second, but Super Bowl is coming up. What do you think? I take it you'll watch Kendrick Lamar in the halftime show. What are your hopes, expectations?
Yeah, I may actually be driving during the Super Bowl. I don't know. Like, I have not organized my life around it. If I happen to be somewhere and there's a television, I would probably definitely watch Kendrick Lamar. But also, like, I can watch that on YouTube the next day or whatever. I don't know. My head is not in the Super Bowl. But I am very interested to see the Kendrick Lamar halftime, which I will see one way or another.
All right. Thank you, Chris. You can read his piece over at the Daily Memphian. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah. I didn't even talk to him. So much to talk about. We didn't even really talk about Oakley. Like, massive matchup against Oklahoma City Saturday. And the Grizzlies, they got their guys. And we'll see how it goes. All right. We have my brother Tim Calkins on Super Bowl advertising in the next segment. He's a professor at Northwestern Kellogg School of Management and does the Super Bowl review every year. We have him on. He's nice to do it every Friday before the Super Bowl. So we will do that next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Chicago winters can be brutal. Snow, ice, freezing temps. If you're thinking, driving in this weather, I need a new Chevy, you're not alone. The right vehicle makes all the difference when it comes to safety, confidence, and comfort on the road. You saw the Chevy lineup at the auto show. Now it's time to take the next step. Need the power and durability of a Silverado? The all-weather confidence of an Equinox or Blazer? The spacious comfort of a Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban? Or the sporty, city-friendly Trax, perfect for navigating winter streets? Your local Chevy dealer has exactly what you need to handle winter like a pro. Don't wait. Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Browse the newest models, special offers, locate your nearest dealer, and start shopping online. Winter roads demand a vehicle you can trust. Find yours now at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Gawkin Show. Joined now, as I am, as is tradition now, the Friday before the Super Bowl, joined by my brother, Tim Gawkin, professor at Kellogg, the business school at Northwestern, and the inventor of the Kellogg Super Bowl ad review. I believe, Tim, I think I saw this is the 21st year. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, we started this back in 2005, and we've been evaluating Super Bowl spots ever since.
So you will get your and who are the experts that you assemble on your panel? You get your students, among other things, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we get our MBA students. This year, the panel will be about 72. But we had over 200 of the students applied. And so we try to pick the students who are really into marketing and advertising. And I think it's a pretty good panel by the time we're done. But it'll be about 72 this year. And we'll gather together on Sunday.
All right. So we look forward to it and want to get right into it. First, just some of the basics. How much are commercials, our ads this year? What do they cost? And roughly, is that the big investment or what do they cost to make?
So the price this year, most of them are sort of in the $7 million range, although apparently some are now going for $8 million, which is a new high watermark for the price of a Super Bowl spot. And then in terms of the investment, you know, that's just that's the minimum investment because that's just a 30-second spot. Now, a lot of these folks are going to run 60s or even 90s. And then to produce these spots could be $3, $4, $5 million. When you look at the celebrities and the special effects and everything that goes into it. And then you got to surround it with all the social media activity and PR and all the other things. So I was talking to an advertiser last night who said they are in, for one spot, they're in $25 million.
So well, if you were working for, whatever, I gather there's some first-time advertisers this year. What's the pro, like, would you do it? You know, I mean, and then there's others who've come and gone. I guess 4 years ago, there was no Budweiser ad, right? No classic Budweiser ad. This year, Budweiser's back in a big way. How does one decide whether to do it and whether it's worth it?
Well, it depends on each brand, and everybody's in a slightly different situation. But basically, the story is this. If you want to reach a big chunk of the U.S. population, this is your only chance. It's your only hope. It's the only way to do it. So if you've got a new product you're trying to introduce, if you're trying to revitalize your brand, if you're trying to deal with competitive threats, you know, if you're trying to make a big splash, this is the time to go. It's the time to spend the money. And you know, that's why you see these companies lining up to do it, because there's only so many slots and everybody here wants to make a big splash and reach everybody. So it's astonishing to see.
Before I get into some of the particulars of this year, I gather, so I was reading today that the first spot is a Dunkin' ad. And I didn't know, do they sell particular ad placement as well as just a spot, or is there some of it random draw? How does that work?
Oh, it's very much all negotiated. So yeah, the first spot is always highly coveted. And what happens in the negotiations is the networks will go to, you know, the brand or the media agency, and they'll say, well, we'll give you that first spot, but you know, you got to buy it first. And then you also have to do all these other things. You've got to buy all this time on The Bachelor, for example, or all this time that maybe people want. But they say, if you buy all this other stuff, and you know, maybe we'll give you that early slot. But it's all negotiable. All the advertisers know exactly when their ad is going to run. What they don't know, and this is sort of interesting to think about, they don't know who are the other brands necessarily in that pod. Often you'll see two or three ads at the same time. And they really don't know what's the creative idea of the other spots. Like, you know, one of the things this year that's sort of entertaining is we will have flying facial hair will be a creative theme. We're going to have...
Whose facial hair is going to be flying, Tim?
Well, there's going to be some eyebrows that are going to be flying, and then there's going to be a mustache that's going to be flying, and it's just
Andy Reid's mustache, right?
That's exactly right.
And whose eyebrows? The guy's what the hell's his name?
Comedian.
Eugene Levy. Right. His eyebrows. Right.
His eyebrows are going to be flying, and you just hope that they're not. All that's not going to be flying around in the same pod, you know, the ones right after the
other. They would figure that out, though, wouldn't they? Wouldn't they know? Like they, oh, I'm sorry, I put your eyebrows next to the mustache. No, they wouldn't do that. Wouldn't they? Isn't that also negotiated?
Well, it's...
figured out or strategized?
Yeah, so it's complicated. There was a Super Bowl a few years back, and the creative theme there was people without pants. So... you know, walking around the office, but without any pants on. And there was an ad from Dockers and an ad from Career Builder. And they both featured people walking around without pants. And it did run one right after the other. And that led, though, to some controversy. So I think there are some checks in it. But it's still sort of this unknown. It's one of the problems for Super Bowl advertisers. You know, you don't want your ad to run right after somebody else has run the funniest ad in the history of the world. Because then you're... Right. going to get overshadowed by this other amazing ad. It's just the uncertainties of Super Bowl advertising.
I'm going to play you an ad. This one I didn't tell you I'm going to play. I was going to play you. It's a Uber Eats ad, and I have a couple of questions about it when it's done. But it does feature Buffalo, and that will unite us here. Here you go.
It has been a banner year for the National Football League. Or should I call it the National Football League?
From the very beginning, football has been a conspiracy to make us hungry.
And we'll call this a pigskin. Make people crave bacon.
Bacon. Bacon.
And everybody loves bacon.
I love bacon.
They do anything to sell food.
Coach, how come we only play on Sundays?
Because nobody's eating ice cream Saturdays, kid.
Jeez.
So the Packers were named after meat packers.
So what should we call the fans, Coach?
Cheeseheads.
Of course. Why do you think Buffalo got a team?
These wings deserve a team.
Yeah.
Hey, pick out a good team name for Buffalo, Bill.
Buffalo.
Buffalo.
And their biggest game?
Come on. Our championship will be a Super Cup.
Can't eat out of a cup, Ted.
But a bowl?
How about a Super Bowl? And we'll start naming players after appliances.
Hey, Coach, do I have to be called Refrigerator?
Yes. And Peyton, he was a beef salesman. Omaha!
Steak.
Omaha!
Steak.
And they're still playing us.
This year, we're not even hiding it anymore.
We have Super Bowl licks.
With a halftime show presented by an apple.
In a stadium named after...
A salad!
A salad!
Matthew.
Yeah, hey.
Sorry, sir. You want me to make a movie about a football conspiracy?
Yes.
No.
Come on, Greta.
No.
Bacon's in.
Everybody loves bacon.
No one believes that football is just some conspiracy to sell
food. When football makes you hungry, order Uber Eats.
All right, Tim. So a couple things about that. The first thing is I saw that commercial because it was like they did a spot about the commercial on Good Morning America, which is just kind of remarkable.
Today's show, Jeff.
Today's show. I'm sorry, Today's show.
It was with Carson.
Get my brands. Yeah, A, kind of remarkable. Secondly, you got Matthew McConaughey there. It almost feels like if you don't have a celebrity, you're bringing a fork to a knife fight or a gunfight. Your thoughts on the commercial and those questions?
So that's a big commercial. You look at the investment there, and you just think about the money that's flying into that commercial. Incredible. The celebrities, the licensing, the whole deal. So real money on that. Is that a great Super Bowl ad? You know, I'll be interested to see how it does with our panel. I worry a little bit about that ad because it seems like it's a really funny ad about the history of football. What I wonder about is the linkage to Uber Eats. You know, because you don't really see Uber Eats all throughout.
The end.
You only really get it at the very end. It's like this big setup to a punchline at the end. That, for us, is going to be... It is sort of debatable linkage, I think, could be the issue on that spot because, sure, it's a funny spot, all about the history of football, which is very cute. But how does Uber Eats fit into that? Or you could swap in a lot of other brands at the end of that ad, and it would still be fine. So all of that says, yes, funny spot. I'm not sure it's as strong as Super Bowl ad. I'd be surprised if it finished at the top of our rankings for effectiveness.
One of the themes, I guess, is Budweiser, the company, is back in a big way.
They are back in a big way. So they've got a bunch of spots. And I think my perspective is they're pretty good. They've done a nice job this year.
Clydesdales, yes, no?
100% Clydesdales. Apparently, what the story is there, they produced that spot, and the plan was to run it just regionally, not to run it as a national Super Bowl ad. But then they put it out, they released it, and people loved it. And they said, this is an amazing spot. We love that one. And so now they've rejiggered things, and they're going to run it nationally. Yeah, that's one of the reasons people like to release their ads early, is you can see if you've got a problem, and you can see if you got a winner. That one's a winner. That's that Budweiser spot, which is why now they're going to make it a national. They're like, let's go. That's a winner. Let's do it. And I think people are going to love that spot.
One, I was going to play it for you, but I don't want to take too much of your time. The Bud Light ad, Big Men in the Cul-de-Sac, with Shane Gillis, Post Malone, Peyton Manning makes an appearance in this one. How is Bud Light doing recovering from its disasters of recent years? And I guess Budweiser has not moved away from Bud Light, although they now have a Michelob Ultra they'll have ads for in this Super Bowl, and Stella as well, I think, ads for in the Super Bowl.
Correct. Yeah. So, apparently Michelob Ultra is doing amazingly well, and there's a huge amount of growth on that brand. Bud Light is coming back, and there's every indication that it's starting to grow again. It's unlikely Bud Light will ever get back to where it was, and they'll sort of never recover from that. But I think their Super Bowl spot this year is pretty strong. It's the branding is really good on it. It also gets to the basic benefit of Bud Light, which is, you got the Bud Lights. It's fun. It's a gathering. Interesting this year, by the way, the political climate shows up in Super Bowl advertising. Absolutely. And I think you sort of see that in the Bud Light spot. Last year, Bud Light was in the city, urban. This year, we're on a cul-de-sac in the suburbs. And it just sort of fits the mood of the country and where we are right now. And it's an interesting pivot. I think that's a good spot. Bud Light's going to do pretty well.
In terms of where we are right now, you mentioned to me, so Carl's Jr. has an ad. It's not an official Super Bowl ad, you said, but it is sort of a throwback.
Well, so Carl's Jr., this is, I think, such a fascinating story. So that brand, they are famous for running, over time, a lot of very provocative advertising, right? You get Paris Hilton washing a car in a bikini, eating a hamburger, and it was all about sort of these women and scant clothing. But then what happened is about 2017, they said, we can't do that kind of stuff. The Me Too era, this is just not what we're doing anymore. It's not appropriate in our society. And so they moved away and they started doing different creative. What is fascinating is this year for their big Super Bowl promotion, it's all back, and now they've got a TikTok, an influencer model, a attractive woman, and she's in a bikini and talking all about the Carl's Jr. promotion. And they're just right back at it. And I think it totally reflects, sort of the pivot in the country. And it's really stunning when you think about it. But they're back at it, and we'll see how that goes over.
What do you think about, so there are a series of serious ads. Every ad isn't funny, although it often feels like that's the theme. You've got, I guess we're going to have the anti-Semitism ad back. I don't know if we have the Jesus ad back or not. We've got the Dove ad, body image and women, I think, back. And then Novartis is doing a breast cancer ad, which I gather has not yet been released. Thoughts on the virtues of, doing something that's a little less lighthearted on Super Bowl Sunday?
So, this is a complicated year for Super Bowl advertisers. So most of the ads are going to be sort of lighthearted and funny. The serious ones are going to be very isolated. Even the Novartis spot, I'll be interested to see how that goes over. That's going to be really celebrating breasts. And, they're going to have cheerleaders and that's going to be interesting.
It's going to be Carl's Jr. meets Novartis. Exactly.
Well, exactly right. And now, and the whole point is you should get mammograms and you got to get things screened and all of that. And that's the point. But they're going to do it apparently in a very provocative way. It's, you know, if there's one brand that's sort of pushing the edge a little bit on the Super Bowl, it might be Novartis, which is really unusual for a pharmaceutical company. You usually don't see them on the creative edge. But people are really conservative this year in their advertising. They're trying desperately hard not to offend anybody. And, you know, the vast majority of this stuff is going to be very light humor. The Dove spot is, you know, it's a serious cause, but that's lighthearted too, actually. I mean, you know, but again, the underlying theme here is, in a polarized country, how do we avoid doing any damage to our brand and offending people? And that's one of the great themes behind this advertising. That's the underlying challenge for these brands.
It's my brother, Tim Calkins, with the Kellogg Advertising Review. It's their 21st year. A little lightning round, Tim, and then I'll let you go. First of all, are we going to have the E-Trade babies back this year or no?
I don't think so.
No E-Trade babies?
No, we'll miss them.
Okay, how about, and this is sort of in the news, how about avocados from Mexico?
No avocados.
No avocados. No avocados this year. Mexico.
I think they're worried about the tariffs and everything.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I take it no crypto.
No crypto that we know of. You never know what's going to run until it runs, but not going to be a big year for crypto. Nope.
AI? Is AI either as a theme or actually AI-generated ads? Are they going to be a part of this?
Surprisingly little AI. You would think that would be a big theme this year, but we'll see it. You know, GoDaddy's going to talk about AI and Google might talk about AI. So we're going to see AI on the Super Bowl, but not a ton. I think people, advertisers don't know really how to talk about it, and it makes people nervous. And so we're seeing surprisingly little AI in this advertising.
And then the final question, final thought is, I think you've told me this before. The one thing that not your panelists, but everyone always agrees every year, these are not like the ones we remember. This isn't a great year. Isn't that the consuming public? We all seem to agree it wasn't a great year for ads every single year. And yet people keep pouring money into it and they keep getting the job done for advertisers.
Oh, that's the one prediction I'm going to make for sure is after the game, people are going to say, you know, the advertising just not as good as I remember it. You know, but the reason that happens is people in their mind remember these isolated Super Bowl ads. They remember, you know, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan shooting for McDonald's, and they remember the Apple 1984 ad. But what people forget is that during those times, there were probably 2,000 other Super Bowl ads that were all sort of decidedly mediocre and sort of blended into each other. And it's just what happens in our memory. You know, we're comparing this year's crop against a selection of these fabulous ads for the past 20 years. So I'm very confident after the game this year, people are going to say, yeah, that advertising. Yeah, just not as good as it. Not as good.
How can people get the results of your the Kellogg Super Bowl ad review?
So you can go to the our website, KelloggSuperBowlAdReview.com. That will get you there. You can also go to my website, and we're posting videos looking back at some great Super Bowl ads right now. We'll also have the results up there at TimCalkins.com.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it.
Always fun, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Yeah, good. That's Tim Calkins. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins, 92.5 FM with you.
Jeff's guests appear on the Frame Corner phone lines. Frame Corner, with expert custom and do-it-yourself framing since 1975 on Park Avenue in East Memphis. Now, back to the Jeff Calkins Show, live from the Genesis Memphis Covington Pike Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. It's pointed out to me that, you know, under that Uber Eats ad, it was green onions. It was Memphis music underneath that ad, Jeffrey. So that's nice. Memphis gets a little run in the Super Bowl ad. Thanks to my brother for joining us. We've come to that time of the show, though, Jeffrey, the official Jeff Calkins Show Super Bowl prediction. Mm-hmm. Who you got? Breakdown. This is the following 30 seconds before we say goodbye, the ensuing 30 seconds, we are going to give our complete analysis of the Super Bowl. Your thoughts?
I think the Eagles are the better team. With that being said, if you pick the Eagles and wrong, you feel like an absolute idiot picking against Patrick Mahomes. I will be. If the league is indeed rigged, we might as well make some money off of it. I'll take the Chiefs 27-24.
And you will be wagering on this game?
Depends on how college basketball Saturday goes.
Depends on how college basketball Saturday goes. Anyway, we'll be back on Monday to talk about it all. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. They are, of course, going to be joined by Anthony Sain today. Tim Murray joins me today on Jeffrey Wright & Company. Blake Topmeyer will join us during hour number one. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend. Back on Monday. For now, our work is done.